Truth Espresso, episode 14.
Face it, we all would rather sleep in this morning. That's why God gave us espresso, to kickstart our zombified corpses into hyperdrive. And now, giving your mind and soul the morning shot of truth it craves. This is Truth Espresso with Daniel Minnick.
Hello, and welcome to Truth Espresso. This is Daniel Minnick, your host, and I am continuing a series talking about abortion fiction. Primarily, the issue is I am responding to an article that was written for the New York Times by a certain screenwriter and novelist, John Irving. This episode is continuing in a series responding to this article, so if you have not listened to other episodes of Truth Espresso, I would highly recommend that you begin at least listening to the last three episodes of Truth Espresso so that this episode might make a little sense in context. But nevertheless, I will continue on replying to Mr. John Irving's article for the New York Times. If you have listened to the previous three episodes, you would realize that we were tearing apart the presumptions in this article about what the pro-life position was really about. This article, entitled "The Long, Cruel History of the Anti-Abortion Crusade," was trying to say that the pro-life people, of which I would be considered one of them, I consider myself 100% pro-life because I believe that human life begins at conception and that all human lives deserve the protection of the law not to be killed, depending on your understanding of what your position would be for punishment against murder. However you believe that murder should be handled, I believe that intentionally killing a fetus in the womb should at least be treated the same way as murder, and however you believe punishment should be brought about for murder, punishment should be brought about for committing murder against the unborn. So that is the backdrop to the concept of pro-life in a nutshell, and Mr. John Irving, who wrote this article for the New York Times, "The Long, Cruel History of the Anti-Abortion Crusade," back in June 23rd of 2019, believes that abortion, the taking of a human life in the womb, should be the right, so-called, of the woman in consultation with her medical provider or her doctor. So the previous episode in response to this article had just gotten into Mr. Irving's history lesson after briefly talking about the Puritan era of the 1600s. Mr. Irving believes that the Puritan era was more liberal about abortions. He believes that the so-called right-wing pro-life people of today are much stronger against abortion than the deeply religious Puritans of the 1600s and 1700s were. And something started to happen in the 1800s to reverse that. And Mr. Irving was lamenting the doctors organizing in the 1800s and competing with the midwives and more of the lay medical providers, the female midwives that these male doctors in the mid to late 1800s were trying to squelch out the midwives who performed abortions. And for some reason, these male obstetricians, these male gynecologists were trying to set up their medical profession. They were trying to take over medical care, and they were trying to take over the so-called reproductive business over against the midwives who performed abortions. And for some reason, in Mr. John Irving's mind, male doctors were somehow against abortion only for the reason that they wanted to control reproductive rights. He himself does not understand what they were thinking, according to his own admission. So, to recap, according to Mr. John Irving, in the mid to late 1800s, good pro-abortion, unprofessional midwives were on one side of the divide, and their practice was over and against the evil professional doctors wanting to control the reproductive rights of women. They were trying to establish their medical profession, and they wanted to take over. And as a result, they ended up somehow convincing the state legislatures of really all the states in the United States to ban abortions from conception, and that this had effects that went all the way up to the late 1970s and now up to the present, beginning with some state laws that started to unravel and turn back the tide in favor of abortion, at least to some extent. And then in the infamous case of Roe versus Wade in 1973, actually, now what you have are the good pro-abortion professional doctors that seem to be against the evil, unprofessional midwives and the crisis pregnancy centers run by women today, trying to control the reproductive rights of, well, other women. So let's see if we can answer Mr. Irving's why question. The topic of this episode is going to be about the conspiracy theories that Mr. Irving expects us to believe about how abortion ended up becoming illegal. So this episode we're going to devote to really trying to figure out the mind of John Irving and see if he's really suggesting that we have to believe in some serious conspiracies that were allegedly going on in the 1800s that somehow just swept abortion right off the map. So let's see if we can answer Mr. Irving's why question. According to Mr. Irving from his article, quote, "But why did doctors lobby for abortion to be illegal? What was their logic? Did doctors underestimate how great the need for abortion was?" And the unquote. The word need is in italics in the original. So Mr. John Irving is suggesting that there was this huge medical need for abortion, this huge need to kill children in the womb. And of course, he doesn't get into, as I've mentioned in previous episodes, he doesn't get into the discussion about what are the unborn? Are these actual living children, developing human beings with true personhood? And do they feel any pain? Are we actually taking the lives of people? He doesn't get into that. He doesn't even act as if that's a question at all. And so Mr. Irving asks, did the doctors of the 1800s underestimate how great the need for abortion was? So my question to Mr. John Irving, if you have to ask questions like this, it proves that you either do not understand the pro-life position or you ignore it. I'm willing to entertain a little bit of both. So if Mr. John Irving writes historical fiction, perhaps he can stand to learn from actual history rather than lean too far into the fiction side of things. If you're not familiar with John Irving, as I mentioned before, he is a screenwriter and he is a fiction author. And so when he is trying to write an article for the New York Times talking about abortion history, I have repeatedly called his efforts abortion fiction. So let's look at the 1800s through the mind of John Irving and what he expects us as pro-lifers to believe about what was going on there. And then next episode, I will actually devote to clearing the air of some of these conspiracy theories by looking at some of the actual history. So let's ask the questions first about what Mr. John Irving is expecting us to believe, and then we will see what really happened. Why did abortion just become so illegal when it was allegedly just such a right for women and for doctors, for midwives performing these innocent little killings of innocent babies in the womb? So if the laws happen to change because of a doctor-run medical profession, why did they lobby to make abortion laws stricter or at least clearer? Why would these doctors do such a thing? This is the question John Irving is puzzled about. If the only reason for the medical profession was to control people, as Mr. Irving seems to think, and there was medical demand for abortion, why wouldn't these doctors just take over the alleged abortion business and make their abortion services the only licensed practice for it? I would like to turn this question on Mr. Irving. Has he considered that? I mean, he is asking this question about why doctors didn't see the need for abortion and they moved to make it illegal just to control women's reproductive rights. So, according to Mr. John Irving's logic, it would not make sense if this was all it was about, if it was just controlling reproductive rights, and there was a market need for abortion which does not involve killing human beings who are persons, then of course, I think the question answers itself. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Remember, according to Mr. Irving, there was a high need for abortions, and this leaves Mr. Irving puzzled and scratching his head as to why so many doctors in all the contiguous states of the United States at the time were just blind to a cold, hard reality. When you don't look at this issue and the history surrounding it in a way that makes actual sense according to a consistent moral position, and the scientific discoveries that confirm that moral position, you can only be like Mr. Irving, asking questions that leaves himself scratching his head. When you are blind to what the pro-life position is all about, you can only scratch your head along with Mr. Irving and wonder why people would fight so hard for something that otherwise would have no purpose or benefit. If the issue of abortion were not about the intentional killing of human lives, as I said in the previous episodes, I would have no reason not to be as pro-abortion as Mr. Irving. So let's move on to Mr. Irving's article. Let's look at another sentence. Quote, "We know what the doctors wanted, and they achieved it. They became the arbiters of women's reproductive health care, unquote. So, according to Mr. John Irving, this whole idea is about controlling reproductive rights, so-called. This whole idea of quote-unquote controlling quote-unquote reproductive rights is all Mr. Irving can see in this whole debacle. The entire issue is nothing but quote-unquote men in power wanting to control quote-unquote women's reproductive health care. As I mentioned before, I will say it again, if the issue of abortion were merely the way Mr. Irving describes, I would have no reason in the world to differ from him. There would be nothing wrong with abortion if the issue had nothing to do with taking the life of a human being with personhood. I would have no reason to oppose abortion, and I would say there would be no reason for anyone to oppose abortion. I will grant Mr. Irving the sun, moon, and stars in that point. But of course, I will say, since the issue that Mr. Irving refuses to address about the question, what is the unborn, and is the act of abortion the taking of a human life with personhood, then that is why there is opposition to abortion. And if it were not the case, there would be no reason to oppose abortion. Anyone who would simply want to control women's reproductive rights that have nothing to do with killing human beings would be absolute lunatics, and Mr. Irving would be completely in his right to think that they are lunatics. But of course, truth is stranger than fiction sometimes. And of course, the fiction that Mr. Irving is trying to pawn on us shows that truth is against his abortion fiction, and that truth might actually make a little bit more sense. Of course, Mr. Irving frames the debate as if the pro-life position has nothing to do with life at all. It's nothing but a senseless battle for control over the reproductive rights of females. If pro-lifers really held their position for the reason Mr. Irving asserts, they would be worthy of much more ridicule than Mr. Irving offers in this article. So continuing on, let's quote Mr. Irving again in this article. Quote, "We don't know the doctor's reasons for making abortion illegal," unquote. This is a fascinating statement. We don't, Mr. Irving? Perhaps some research would do Mr. Irving some good. The truth of the matter is that the sweeping adjustments to laws had to do with, dun dun dun, science. Woo-hoo-hoo! I mean, wouldn't that just make, oh, so much more sense that there would be a common denominator for all this? An objective discovery in science would naturally lead to sweeping changes throughout the United Kingdom and the United States. But of course, let's not put the most reasonable explanation for why abortion suddenly went illegal in a few decades, more illegal, shall we say, in just a matter of a few decades, sweeping across the United Kingdom and the United States. Let's not expect Mr. Irving to come to reason, shall we say, because after all, Mr. Irving writes abortion fiction. So, continuing on, quote, "In the 1840s, the fetus wasn't yet sacred. Fetal life was still defined by, quote-unquote, quickening. When the woman felt the fetus move, not before the fourth or fifth month. From the 1840s to 1900, we know the results of what the doctors did, not their thoughts. Unquote. Let me get this straight, Mr. Irving. According to your understanding of history, thousands of doctors spread across all the states of thousands of doctors spread across all the states of the contiguous Union of the United States of America for some odd reason agreed on something. Something that was novel and radical. They all agreed on something sinister and controlling. They all agreed to try to lobby their state governments to get rid of abortion, a practice that was allegedly in vogue, a practice that was allegedly right, that was allegedly highly needed by respectable society, a practice that would have made these doctors a lot of money. All these thousands of doctors undercut their own profit-making potential. They did this just to control women. I mean, they could have had a much greater relationship with their own patients if they actually offered them an allegedly good service they demanded. You know, but why let filthy lucre stand in the way of pure, unadulterated misogyny, right? But let's not speculate about their thoughts, because Mr. Irving said that we don't know their thoughts or their reasoning. All we know is what they wanted because we know they achieved it. That's all we know about what they wanted. We just know that what happened was the result of what they wanted, but we don't know their thoughts. Let's not forget the absurdly ridiculous fiction Mr. Irving expects us to swallow as actual U.S. history. He expects us to believe that doctors motivated by self-interest just to control women managed to convince legislatures in all the states of the Union to grant them the desires of their heart. All these legislatures, state by state, in a matter of a few decades, managed to agree with the selfish reasoning of these lobbying doctors. For some reason, these state legislatures were willing to overthrow the alleged precedent of commonplace abortions, which was the allegedly moral position, and grant doctors monopoly privileges in women's health just so that they could control women's so-called reproductive rights. This is the absurd version of history that Mr. Irving expects us to take seriously. Remember, according to Mr. Irving, quote, "We know the results of what the doctors did, not their thoughts," unquote. So, we can't maybe get a hint of their thoughts by looking at the laws? The wording of the laws don't tell us anything about what might have been in their minds? Seriously? Oh no, perish the thought. These laws were all a ruse to cover up their unknowable thoughts. The only thing we know for certain is that the laws these doctors managed to get passed could not possibly reflect what these doctors actually believed. How does Mr. Irving know this? How does he know that there's a disconnect between what the laws actually said and what the doctors' reasoning for the laws were? How do we know that there's a disconnect between what the laws say and what the doctors' reasons were for getting the laws passed? Well, Mr. Irving is a novelist. He can't possibly be wrong. Why, he's been writing historical abortion fiction for decades. Why shouldn't we take his word for gospel truth? And it gets worse. Not only did these doctors manage to get legislatures to bow to the will of their phantom thoughts state by state, but they also managed to spread their manipulative gangrene across the pond to the former mother country as well. On the other side of the Atlantic, England was simultaneously enduring its own plague of doctors getting rid of Puritan abortions. Actually, this whole process started in England a little earlier than in the United States. So either these American doctors had smartphones before Alexander Graham Bell and they called up their British colleagues and to get this legal process going, or this was another attempt by England after the War of 1812 to usurp the post-colonial economy by exporting anti-abortion doctors or medical propaganda. Whatever the case, we know the results from these doctors, but not their thoughts, right? Now, there are some pretty intricate conspiracy theories out there. There are plenty of strange interpretations of historical events that involve the collusion of centralized powers. But no conspiracy theory to which I've ever been exposed comes close to topping what Mr. Irving proposes that we should believe about the 1800s and abortion laws. This is not about a few world leaders agreeing to start a war or something like that. This is about thousands of doctors spread across a large landmass of culturally diverse states that were far less homogenous than they are today. These states were a lot more independent of each other then in the 1800s than they were today. These doctors managed to get all these states to pass similar laws that do not reflect the actual thoughts of these doctors. And we need to throw the island nation of England into this mix, don't forget. Either there was a collusion between American doctors and British doctors to turn their unknowable thoughts into law, or it was purely coincidence. American and British doctors just so happened to come up with the desire to control women at the exact same time, or close to the same time. Now, if any of this reasoning from John Irving about abortion history still makes sense to you, I would suggest that you would have a far more fertile imagination than I have. If we apply our minds, we can get beyond such absurd and contradictory notions of conspiracy theories and maybe apply some common sense via Occam's razor. If you are not familiar with Occam's razor, it can be summed up by saying that if there are two explanations for an event, the one that requires the least amount of speculation is most likely correct. Mr. Irving's theory of abortion history just begs for Occam's razor. What if the simplest observation were actually true? What if the wording of the laws passed in all the states and in England actually did reflect the mind of the doctors? Of course, this would have to mean that all these laws reflected simple honesty. They reflected the actual beliefs of these doctors for some odd reason. Maybe laws that recognize that life begins at conception, and that intentionally killing a child in the womb just might be murder, maybe that actually might be what the doctor ordered. So let me quote from a pro-abortion article in the leftist periodical Slate. The article from Slate is entitled "The Quickening, the momentous pregnancy event that became a relic." And this article is by Slate contributor Ruth Graham. I will post a link to this article in the show notes as well. So from the article by Ruth Graham in Slate, quote, "As pregnancy became an increasingly medicalized experience, the prominence of the quickening has faded. Today, most women confirm their pregnancies in the first few weeks with over-the-counter pregnancy tests. Pregnancy is no longer much of a mystery, but a gradual process objectively observable by mother and doctor at just about every stage," unquote. So, even according to this leftist pro-abortion contributor to a leftist periodical Slate, science, admittedly, can actually tell us something about the fetus in the womb that might affect how we should handle it? Is this true? Perish the thought. But Mr. Irving thinks that science plays no role in the grand scheme of things. He thinks that understandable ignorance of the Puritans to be able to see into the womb should be a more objective standard for how to regard the fetus. He thinks that a subjective experience of the mother should define the difference between murder and privilege. But science shows that quickening is not a momentous occasion in actual fetal development. According to Ruth Graham of Slate, contributor to Slate, pregnancy is, quote, "a gradual process objectively observable by mother and doctor at just about every stage," unquote. Indeed. So, if pregnancy is a, quote, "gradual process," unquote, and is now, quote, "objectively observable," unquote, I would invite Mr. Irving to demonstrate an objective point in time in fetal development that makes the difference between a, quote, unquote, "choice" to, quote, unquote, "terminate" and a murder, quote, unquote, "murder," or even any kind of crime. This is the kind of question that Mr. Irving pretends does not exist. Yet, in terms of what we now know about science and how fetal development is, to quote the article, "objectively observable," according to this pro-abortion woman, perhaps this objectivity could tell us more about what truly the fetus is at every stage. But Mr. Irving is stuck in the age of the Puritans, demanding that the objectivity we now enjoy via advances in science should be thrown in the trash in favor of the subjectivity of quickening. Let's read more from pro-abortion Ruth Graham in Slate. Quote, "The quickening doesn't make sense as a legal, philosophical, or moral boundary line anymore. But it's that radical subjectivity that makes it worth preserving as an emotional milestone of motherhood," unquote. So, what should we trust? What science tells us, or what a fiction writer tells us? Why does Mr. Irving act as if a subjective experience that indicates nothing substantial in fetal development is better to provide a legal, philosophical, or moral boundary line, to quote Ruth Graham. I believe the answer truly is that he doesn't. Mr. Irving really does not regard quickening as an objective measurement between a crime and a choice. If he happens to know Ruth Graham, or if they were to meet, my guess is that they would not have a debate over quickening. They would probably get along just fine, and they would probably agree about abortion choice. I mean, they're both pro-abortionists. Yes, quickening is merely a tool for an argument in Mr. Irving's tool belt. It is an excuse. It is a red herring. It solves nothing. It merely distracts from the elephant in the living room that really should be what the discussion is about. And what should be what the discussion is about? The question is, what is the unborn? So, shall we finally shed ourselves of conspiracy theories and learn what actually happened in the 1800s? Just what were the thoughts of these doctors? Why and how did they convince state legislatures to pass laws that clarified or increased the penalty for intentional killing of pre-quickening babies? Why was this phenomenon in the United States and in England? First, let's address the connection between England and the States. For even a century after the War for Independence, the States roughly followed English common law. Pro- and anti-abortion sources agree on this history. And for reference to that, why do I make that argument that the states were following English common law? Well, I will provide two links. One of them is an article called Abortion Was Illegal in All 13 American Colonies in 1776 from the pro-life website lifenews.com. And then another article confirming that the states followed English common law is the pro-abortion article called Bringing Down the Flowers, The Controversial History of Abortion from theatlantic.com. I will provide both of these links in the show notes. So scientific discoveries led to greater understanding of embryonic development. Obviously, this meant that quickening was no longer what the word implies. The fetus in the invisible chamber of the womb did not come to life when the mother could feel movement. It is very much alive long before then. Even pro-abortion doctors admit this. So this is all the time that we have for this episode. So we just thought for ourselves a little bit. We debunked the conspiracy theories that Mr. Irving is expecting us to believe as to why the doctors in the medical profession that was beginning to be established in the 1800s, why were they against abortion? And Mr. Irving expects us to believe that all of these laws that quickly swept abortion nearly off the map somehow does not even reflect the thoughts of the doctors that pushed to get these laws passed. I mean, words just cannot even express how ridiculous this is. So if we merely assume that the wording of these laws and the reasons why abortion was made much more illegal and more clarified Abortion was clarified as illegal across the states and in England if the reasons for that actually lines up with the thoughts of the doctors, because they were more in tune with the scientific discoveries of the time, then things make more sense. But, you know, when you write abortion fiction like Mr. Irving, sense doesn't have to matter. Entertainment and a good read is what matters.
Thank you for waking up with Truthspresso. Good morning, and God bless your day.
Hey friends, Daniel Minnick here again. If you liked waking up to this episode of Truthspresso, I would really appreciate it if you would rate it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever application you use to listen to Truthspresso.